You're listening to Radio Influence.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
And away we go for the Tuesday, January 2nd edition of the Landry Football Podcast. Happy New Year. We hope and trust that you had a very blessed and happy New Year and brought in 2018 in a very fun and safe way. Certainly been very busy in the football world, and what a, gosh, it's one of those days where you don't know where to start, but we're going to cover a few things. We're going to talk a little bit about, obviously, the national playoff semifinals, what happened, some of the other bowl action, what it really means. The NFL playoffs are set. We'll touch on that. Got a lot of coaching changes in the NFL. We'll get into some of that as well. We're also going to remind everybody that you know, we're kind of getting into that time of year where you're stretching into, obviously, the games are getting less and less, and we're obviously getting into that transition period of the offseason. Not there yet, but we're going to keep everybody updated on all the players that are declaring for the NFL draft. January 15th is the deadline there. Certainly, early recruiting is done. The second phase of February, we'll talk a lot about that. Get you ready for the All-Star Bowl games and what's going on around there to get you prepared for this offseason. Free agency, we're going to break down, obviously, how the league is kind of broken down in terms of top players at each position. So we're going to get all of that up for you and in time. So check it out at LandryFootball.com. Holiday special is done at LandryFootball.com. But what a great opportunity, though, to still take advantage of getting into the membership for LandryFootball.com, where we've got so much to offer in this time of year, where we get everybody focused on the business season of football and the importance of it and how it really has a great deal of effect of which goes on into the football season, the successes and the failures. Well, all right. The Rose Bowl game, good enough for you? How about that is a great game, and what an exciting game. And it was two games in one. You had what looked like to be a Oklahoma dominant performance, completely coming out, Georgia not being able to stop them. It looked like it was headed towards a blowout to the point to where you thought, okay, opening series of the second half, Oklahoma gets the ball. This game might be over right there. But a couple of things jumped out at me, and it's little things. I get to the first half and the second, but where the change, maybe one of the little turning points, and there were several, but the first one, and I tweeted it out, you know, when Georgia was able to get a field goal right prior to half, seems like a little thing, and it seems like not much at all, but all of a sudden, they get the game to a two-possession game. Go into halftime. The big turning point is what they did at halftime and the adjustments that they made, but having that in is just a little thing, but boy, it just kind of creates a little bit of momentum and a little bit of a feeling of, hey, listen, we stop them and we go down and score. All of a sudden, then we're talking about it's a one possession game at that point. So I thought it was pivotal. Now, let's go back to the first half. And I thought that Oklahoma did a phenomenal job early of working the seams, working the tempo upward, running the football very effectively. Georgia came out in a lot of cover four, a lot of cover three, a lot of quarters coverage, a lot of cover three. Their safeties really struggled with eye discipline. I thought Oklahoma moved them and generated some big plays. It was one of the reasons why they just had a hard time being able to do anything well. And if you are a member of LandryFootball.com, you read some of the previews in the how I analyzed some of the games. And one of the things I broke down in there was the fact that to play Oklahoma's offense, you have to take away something. And that something is the run game. Their running game is the thing that fuels their offense. You got to take away something. You can't allow them to just pick you apart with a run and the pass. That was really important. Now I'm going to take you back again to the late field goal and for the half. Two possession game. You go into halftime. And Kirby Smart, Mel Tucker decide, look, defensively, we are going to take something away, and we are going to, come hell or high water, take away that running game. So what do they do? How do they do it? Well, first of all, how you defend the run affects how you're going to have to play the pass as well. So what they did was, we're going to play man coverage. We're going to trust you on the outside, and we are going to run blitz. We're going to bring pressure up the middle and stop the run. We're going to attack the quarterback. We're going to attack him, not try to hem him in or force him. We're going to just attack him, and we're going to be very aggressive. Now, in doing that, that's risky. But at that point, they needed to take some chances, and that's exactly what they did. And what they did is ran a lot of double A-gap pressure with some B-gap pressure. A-gap, of course, sure everyone knows, just make sure if you don't, the gap between the center and guard, either side, and then the B-gap between guard and tackle. Heavy pressure up the middle was how they absolutely stopped the run before it could get going and attack the quarterback. And what they did was they read the center, and as the center turned, what they did, the linebacker pops his head up to the side where the center goes. So you've got wherever the center turns, his protection, linebacker steps up into that, and the other backer blitzes the area opposite. Really important to understand, because as the center turns, if you visualize it, as he turns, it creates an opening, it creates a little bit of an angle, and the pressure went right through that gap. And they did a great job of it, and Oklahoma did a very poor job of adjusting to it, as they could not stop him. It was the key to getting off the field and not allowing Oklahoma to score points. Folks, they were shutting out Oklahoma in the second half, for all intents and purposes, and it wasn't a simple adjustment. It was a huge adjustment, an adjustment that, you know, absolutely was needed because to stop the bleeding, and it was risky, and it worked. Adjustment number two on offense: Oklahoma didn't stop Georgia all day. Georgia's game plan, running the football, not enough of a commitment to it early. I think Oklahoma was inviting Georgia to throw the football, and they did. But there's a huge advantage that Georgia had running the football against this front. The Oklahoma defense does not defend the run well. They are a poor gap control defense. And it proved it again, very poor tackling angles. And I thought Georgia did a really good job staying committed to it and giving some leeway to a freshman quarterback that was mature enough and skilled enough to be able to check out of some runs into better runs based upon the front. that Oklahoma was showing, and it gashed them on a couple of two or three big plays. It was the big plays came out of the running game for Georgia. I mean, all those huge runs, result of Oklahoma overplaying and Georgia adjusting to it, their protections, and Sam Pittman, Jim Chaney, and Fromm really collectively doing a great job of making the adjustments, and outstanding running backs in Michelle and Chubb that just took the game over. Phenomenal, well-deserved win. In Oklahoma today, they're frustrated. They obviously feel like they let one get away. You have that big of a lead, of course you feel like you let one get away. There's no question about it. Where did things go wrong with Oklahoma? Well, I think I just said it. Defensively, not being able to make the adjustment. Listen, if you're going to run up-tempo offenses and score a bunch of points, you're not going to be a great defense that shuts people out. But you have to be a good situational defense. You have to tackle well in space. You have to find a way defensively to adjust to an opponent, overplay the run if you have to, fill gaps, pressure, stop the run, take chances on defense. Where I see it going forward, and I think the future at Oklahoma is bright. Lincoln Riley's outstanding, but let's call it like it is. Baker Mayfield's going to be on. Oklahoma's still going to be talented. They're going to be able to run the football. They've got good young receivers. They'll be able to throw it and score points. But defensively, they've got to get some elite corners, and they've got to do a better job of tackling. And this leads to this point. You got some real issues there defensively, and Mike Stoops is a problem, and is a big problem as a defensive coordinator, because Bob Stoops is kind of the modern-day icon of Oklahoma football that has such a good relationship with the university president and the athletic director, and he certainly kind of handpicked Lincoln Riley to be the new head coach, and with it, the staff stays in place, including his brother Mike. So what do you do if you're Lincoln Riley? Have you had enough success? And do you feel strong enough to say, I need to make some changes on defense? Or do you sit there and say, well, whoa, you know, I'm lucky I've got this job. Got it largely due to the support of Bob Stoops. I got to sit there and I got to accept the fact that Mike Stoops is going to be my defensive coordinator. Very tough spot. And I bring it up because these are the tough decisions that you have to make as a head coach. And what type of support does he have administratively? Not support in terms of his job being in any danger, of course. Lincoln Riley going to the playoffs as a young coach. I think it's remarkable. I think they're tickled pink that team was able to go this far. But how does this perceived internally? Because this is a tough loss. When you get this big of a lead, you've got to find a way to hold it. But remember, when you're built this way, no lead is big enough. And I think that Georgia made some really good adjustments that almost cost them. And you know, it's funny because you talk about momentum and how momentum changes, you know, but in games where momentum is bigger when you have a good defensive team and good special teams, and that's where momentum really changes, and it's you can latch on to it. Momentum is fleeting when you have a team that's not very good defensively. Oh, yeah, you can. Momentum is fine, but look at Oklahoma. They almost still won the game late because they built such a huge lead that cushion was so great that even with completely being dominated and the momentum gone completely to Georgia in the second half, it was the heck with momentum. The cushion had given them enough of a lead to where the fumble return for a touchdown almost put them in a position where that was going to win the game for them. And the entire second half momentum loss would have been, you know, covered up by the fact that, look, they built a big lead. But as I always say, when you're a team that defensively can't come up with stops, it's tough. What an impressive drive late for Georgia to tie it. And then you think, I did, overtime is going to favor Oklahoma. Why? I mean, you're in field goal range in these college football overtimes. They're really good at finishing drives. They're such a great offensive team. It's going to go to the favor of the offense, right? I mean, that's what overtime is. You basically put the ball in the red zone and you have at it and you shoot the ball. It was definitely built to the advantage of Oklahoma, except Georgia again made the big plays, including the block kick and the great defense in the red zone to force their first field goal. And then obviously good situational football. Wildcat in the red zone, Wildcat for the winning touchdown. Great job. Well-deserved, well-earned by Georgia. And second year, Kirby and his staff, Kirby and crew going to the national championship. Alabama, dominant on defense. You know, I thought this game would be closer. This game wasn't close. Clemson really had no shot. Their offense had no chance against this Alabama defense. We talked, LandryFootball.com, we wrote about it, that good luck preparing for Alabama when Nick Saban's got this long to prepare and you don't have that dynamic quarterback that's going to bail you out. What in the history of modern-day college football under Nick Saban have we seen to tell you that that's going to happen? Now, that's the first for everything. I get it, but you better be one great football team to be able to beat Alabama. I think there is a desire to see Alabama struggle, great team struggle. And I think when Alabama obviously did not play well in the latter part of the season, people were ready to jump and pounce on that. Well, there you go. It's not the same. And Kirby and Georgia are there, and you know they're the future, and the future might be now, and Clemson is the new program. I mean, I got to ask all the questions. If Clemson wins, are they this? Are they? It's like, you know, we cannot wait for the game. Can we actually watch the game and see? Well, no. You got your answer, okay? And here's the answer. There's going to be a point in time that Alabama is not going to be Alabama. Nick Saban's not going to be there, and Alabama is going to fall back to the rest of the college football world, and they're going to be like everybody else. Until then, folks, Alabama is Alabama. As long as Nick Saban is there and coaching the way he is, recruiting the way he is, it's still the program in college football, and everybody's a distant second. And Georgia may win the national championship this year and win a game, and that is one thing that's great, but Alabama is still the consistent king of college football in the modern era. And it is because when healthy, good luck trying to run the football on this team. Good Oklahoma offense. At times they've been better than good this year. Couldn't do anything. Auburn played well, no question, and ran the football on Alabama. I get it. Mississippi State did as well. I get it. You get down so many bodies, it's tough to be the same. And they were. It was a very unusual circumstance. Alabama's still somewhat thin at linebacker, but not like it was where they were completely devastated in those games. And so that's the difference. And, you know, if you had a quarterback that was, well, if you had Deshaun Watson back again, I think it's probably a different game. It wasn't. And Alabama just is completely dominant. Offensively, had a hard time putting Clemson away, but this is a really good Clemson defense. Couldn't run the football straight ahead like they normally do against most people. Couldn't move the line of scrimmage like they do against most people. And then we know this is not a great passing game. Still missing some plays in the passing game. but they keep pounding you and hounding you. And boy, if you don't watch it and they find a way defensively to force negative plays and turnovers, that's a difference in the game. Got plenty of time. I say plenty of time. We're going to talk about it, obviously, on Thursday. We're going to break it down in grave detail for you at LandryFootball.com, this championship game, which is an SEC versus SEC matchup. And, oh, by the way, yes, the SEC was down in terms of the programs top to bottom. No doubt about that. But folks, the top two teams in the country proven to be the SEC. And, you know, can we get enough of this, you know, where they got the four teams wrong, they should do this, it should be conference championship, yada, yada, yada. Folks, the four best teams were put into the playoffs. Those two teams that won earned their way in. Top two teams in the country this year from the SEC, and they've proven it. So we'll see is the matchup that we thought was going to be for the SEC championship all year long. We're going to see it in the national championship. The rest of the SEC did struggle. Some other games leading up to these two. Notre Dame taking care of LSU. LSU struggled late. Offense was certainly not there. I thought clearly that it had something to do with the offensive coordinator issues with Matt Canada. You know, obviously gone from LSU now. It's going to happen. It's going to have to be a buyout. Going to be a difficult situation. The latest on that is the athletic director, Joe Oliva, doesn't want to pay off Matt Canada and kind of admit their mistake. Whereas Ed Orgeron doesn't want to work with him. You pay a guy $1.5 million. He's got 3 years left on a deal. It's a lot of money that you owe for a guy that's not going to work for you. What they would have to do is pay the offset money. He gets paid $500,000 to coach somewhere else. LSU is going to have to pay him $1 million a year for the remainder of the contract to coach somewhere else just to not be there. Not a good look for LSU. It's an embarrassing look for LSU. Again, showing incompetence in terms of the ability to evaluate the situation and fully vet the candidates and getting a guy that, you know, basically his background has been very open in terms of his style of offense and his personality style. No surprises here. Folks, you don't want Chinese food, don't go to a Chinese restaurant. You know, it's incompetence and shows the lack of skills, head coaching skills, to be able to assess and evaluate coaches. From an administration standpoint, evaluating head coaches and a head coach evaluating assistant coaches. It's a world I live in every day, and it's one in which LSU's really struggled. Other news there, Dave Aranda, the defensive coordinator at LSU, is very, very interested in trying to get consideration for the Green Bay Packer defensive coordinator job. The Packers are inclined to go with a veteran defensive coordinator. Somebody like a Vic Fangio and a couple of others are higher on their list. But he's very interested. Obviously, a jump to the NFL is probably in the offering to Dave and soon, possibly. This is something that I think would interest him, but you know, he's not going to move just to move. I don't think he's unhappy at LSU, but I think the handwriting's on the wall there. I think he understands that there's going to be challenges there to the point where I think there is some consideration by him to look at a Texas A&M if it were to be something that Jimbo Fisher wanted to do. Jimbo's a very loyal guy and likes certain guys, and I know he's got some other guys in mind. I don't know that Jimbo, it's not a money issue at Texas A&M. I just don't know that Jimbo is necessarily inclined to go in that direction in terms of his selection. Not that Dave wouldn't be an outstanding hire for him, but I don't know that Jimbo sees it as a better fit over some other guys that he has in mind. So we'll monitor that and let you know how that'll play out. Fan base, another fan base and a coach that's got to be pulling his hair out is Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. What a collapse against South Carolina. What a strange mess this has become. I would have bet anything that when Jim Harbaugh got the job, that this is going to be a hand-in-glove fit and a not a home run hire, a grand slam walk-off bottom of the ninth World Series winning home run hire. This is as good as it as good gets. Guy not only successful in the NFL, but it's successful in college at Stanford. We forget that. It's not the he went to the Super Bowl with the Niners. It's the fact that he basically is the father of the modern day Stanford program. The coaches that he hired, including one David Shaw, who's still getting it done at Stanford. This was a no-brainer. He goes back home to Michigan, where there's good academic standard, but certainly not the issues that Stanford has. You know he's going to recruit well. You know he's going to develop well. You know he's going to win big. It is a no-brainer, right? It's not like the program hasn't won. It's not like it's a disaster. It's not like they're collapsing completely and not even going to bowl games. They, for that matter, you know, we're playing in a New Year's Day bowl game, the Outback Bowl. So it's a good season. I get it. But, boy, the struggles against your rivals, Ohio State, Michigan State, all the limelight of the sarcastic twittering, the look at me, the getting paid more money than anybody, everything is just putting a bright light on them, and the bright is showing some warts and some moles that this guy is, you know, not living up to the hype, to say the least. Then you go to South Carolina, play South Carolina in Tampa, in the Outback Bowl, and you're thinking, I mean, this is one of the games that you look at and you say, boy, South Carolina does not match up against Michigan. Boy, you really don't. And it's proven that out. 19-3, and Michigan's having their way with them. And it is a gradual, complete getting handled the rest of the way. Impressive win by South Carolina. What a collapse by Michigan. It's going to be a tough offseason, tough loss to swallow there. Also remind you that we're going to keep you up to date on all the draft declarations. They're starting to come in. And, again, we'll let you know on here, but mainly at LandryFootball.com. You want to check us out there. A lot of coaching changes in the NFL. The one that maybe has taken the most people by surprise is Mark Davis's decision to fire Jack Del Rio, and it clearly was tied to his desire to bring John Gruden back. Well, why? Well, you got to go back when John Gruden was the head coach of the Raiders for his dad, Al. Mark was always enamored with John Gruden. Of course, John had success there, but there was just an affinity for him, and John was, it just hit it off. If you look at it on the surface from a football standpoint, there's a lot of reasons to poke holes into it. First of all, Jack Del Rio didn't do a bad job there. They won, did a really good job last year, but a couple of things that Jack misstepped. Really made two bad decisions. He didn't look hard or strong enough at his defensive side and what he was doing, to the point where he ended up having to make a defensive coordinator change during the season. That was a problem and maybe a mistake not addressing it last offseason. And then he made the worst mistake by firing a couple of key guys on the offensive side, making an offensive coordinator change that I thought really hurt this team. So it's on the head coach. Again, at any level, you really make a poor job with staff decisions, boy, that could kill you. And boy, it did. Derek Carr was injured coming off of an injury this year, but there is no question that the coordinator moves really hurt this team. It didn't work well at all. So, the fact that John is definitely wanted to get back into coaching, wanted to be in the NFL, he had an affinity for the Raiders situation. You know, he left for Tampa. Left for Tampa, by the way. Al Davis was one of those guys that always wanted himself to be the focal point of the Raiders. And never, a coach was just an employee. And he never wanted that coach or any one player to be given the credit. It was all about Al and, you know, being, I'm the Raiders. I am the Raiders. I am the organization. That's what he always used to say. It was all about Al. Well, Mark Davis is in a situation where he's going to Vegas next year. Not, you know, he's got another year in Oakland, but they're making a move to Vegas soon. So they not only need to improve on the field, which you can debate whether John Gruden is the answer. Developing young players has not been a strength of his. I don't know that it's a great football move, but one thing you have to admit, this is a great PR move. And PR is behind this. The affinity for John Gruden by Mark Davis is behind this. And what this does, it just says, we're going to Vegas. That in and of itself is splash, splash. This is a splash hire if they can work it out. Don't buy the whole, he's going to get a piece of the team. That has to be approved by the league finance committee. It's not going to get it be approved. I can tell you, they don't want to go down that path. It doesn't mean that they can't be creative with bonuses and do different things, but John Gruden's not going to own the team. Now, you can pay them whatever they want to pay them, but that absolutely is not going to happen. Other openings, we know there's one in New York with the Giants. We know that Jim Caldwell's gone in Detroit. Bob Quinn feels like he had a better roster and should have done more. Chuck Pagano certainly is a great story, great guy. Things never went right. The teams played hard. I wish they would have done a better job building a team around Andrew Luck for Chuck Pagano. Just never worked out. He's gone. Chicago fires John Fox. They're definitely looking for an offensive guy, and Bruce Arians steps away. Marvin Lewis, well, with the Bengals, it takes a while for them to make decisions, and Marvin doesn't have a contract. Would they consider giving him a one-year deal? Would Marvin consider working on a one-year deal? Would he want to transition into doing something else? Who knows? It takes the Bengals to figure out why. Some guys to look out for. John DeFilippo, the quarterback coach at Philadelphia. Todd Haley, the offense coordinator at Pittsburgh. Matt LaFleur, the offense coordinator of the Rams. Josh McDaniels, coordinator of the Patriots. Matt Nagy, the offensive coordinator of the Chiefs. Pat Shermer, the offensive coordinator of the Vikings. Defensively, Matt Patricia, defense coordinator of the Patriots. Jim Schwartz, a defense coordinator of Philadelphia. Mike Vrabel, the defense coordinator of the Texans. Steve Wilks, the defense coordinator of the Panthers. Some other guys to keep in mind. As far as GM moves, we know that a GM move has been made in Cleveland. We know that Dave Gettleman is the new GM in New York. Green Bay is likely going to promote somebody within their staff to replace Ted Thompson, who's going to be more and more of an advisory role. We are keeping track for you with all the assistant coaching moves around the NFL. Lots going on in Denver, Dallas, plenty of other moves, so keep it tuned to LandryFootball.com for all of that. Want to talk a little bit about the Rooney Rule. And one of the things that I want to do is, and I'm going to address it on Thursday, but I just kind of want to preference it. People talk about the Rooney Rule, the pros and cons. I'm going to tell you not just why it was formulated. I think everybody understands that, but people talk about it being a farce, and there becomes a pros and cons. But as someone that gets involved in interviews and have been involved in it a lot, I certainly want to give a perspective of the advantages of going to an interview even when there's no chance to get it and why that is a good thing, why that helps you, helps the interviewer and the interviewee. So we're going to get to that on another edition, probably on Thursday. We'll see if we can fit it into that show. But that is a look at the wrap-up of the weekend. We obviously have a deeper dive we're going to put into the NFL playoff matchups. We know, obviously, who's playing where. Tennessee's at Kansas City on Saturday. Atlanta at the Rams on Sunday, on Saturday as well. On Sunday, Buffalo going to Jacksonville, Carolina at New Orleans. We're going to have the complete breakdowns of those games on Thursday as well as at LandryFootball.com. So we'll get to that then. Again, Happy New Year to everyone. And remember, we'll join you on Thursday for another edition of the Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com. Check us out. We'll talk to you then.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at Landry Football. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.